and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Harditz, and today we're continuing our team preview series with a look at the AFC West. We've already gone through the NFC West, the AFC, and NFC South, and we're just going to keep on keeping on throughout this offseason. So, as always with these team previews, I am joined by the one, the only New England Patriots training camp connoisseur, Andrew Erickson, who has already, you know, been watching the Keel Harry score a red zone touchdown with, you know, I don't think anyone actually guarding him, but Andrew, you've been spending some time over at the Patriots. What's the status of the QB competition, man?
Yeah, today was not a great day. So recording this on Thursday, neither of the quarterbacks really stood out today. Mac Jones airmailed a couple balls. I mean, just kind of, it kind of gave me the fact about this offense is maybe it's above average passing offense in 2021, like, or maybe it's just average. Like, that's like the thing though. Like, neither of these quarterbacks is going to like elevate this team to becoming any sort of juggernaut whatsoever. And that's reflected obviously in a lot of the wide receiver ADP. So yeah, just kind of keep that in mind.
There's only one really fantasy relevant note to come out of New England so far, and that was Jonnu Smith saying that he and Hunter Henry are going to be the Boston Tea Party, spelled T-E like tight end. And I am so mad that for months, people, we were thinking about this tight end group and nobody came up with it. And before you tell me, okay, I realize Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski used to go by this back in 2011 or whenever. So excuse me for missing the nickname coming out a decade ago. But either way, Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, Boston Tea Party, fantastic content right there. We're done with talking about the Patriots, though. Sorry, Andrew. I do always love your Josh Gordon jersey in the background for the YouTubers out there. But we got some AFC West goodness to talk about today. As always, we're going to go through each team's defining question, most underutilized player, favorite fantasy value pick, wild card scenario, and end things with an over-under. So, Andrew, let's kick things off with the Denver Broncos. Defining question has to be Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater under center.
Yes, that is the question. I know that you are the Drew Lock stan of Pro Football Focus, but I definitely side with Teddy Bridgewater in the case of who I think should be under center, just looking at who can benefit and who can increase the output of this offense. Teddy Bridgewater is that guy. You know, last year he was the third most accurate quarterback in terms of adjusted completion percentage, is one of two quarterbacks to support three top 25 fantasy wide receivers, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, and Robbie Anderson. So for me, it's got to be Bridgewater's under center. And if for some reason Drew Lock beats him out, then okay, that means Drew Lock must have improved or shown some type of growth where, okay, maybe he won't be airmailing as many balls in 2021 so we can get the ball into the playmakers' hands, like, because that's what we want, because they are just littered with so many great wide receivers. We just need them to get the ball in their hands, get it to Judy, to Cortland Sutton. We're going to talk about Tim Patrick, I think, a little bit later on. So yeah, I really think that it should be Bridgewater as the quarterback. I think he can really help this offense. And if not, if they do go with Drew Lock, then okay, I think that means that they've seen growth in him. And look, the one thing that's good about Drew Lock from last year, it was his PFF grade from a clean pocket, was 15th overall. And again, the big time throw rate. You know, you go to Ian's Twitter page, you're going to find all those big time throws. Yeah, because Drew Lock definitely can deliver in those two aspects of the field.
The reason I like Drew Lock is not because I think he should be any team's long-term quarterback if their main priority is winning. It's because when you have red zone on, you hear the name Drew Lock said, you perk up and you will watch what happens, because as many bad things as he does, which is a lot, believe me, he does make some great throws because this guy just thinks he can complete any pass out there on the field. Of course, as we like to do on this podcast, try to come up with, you know, some sort of analytical formula to take what we're seeing and put it, you know, in the numbers. And one I came up with was basically an entertainment rate, where I took the difference in rate between big time throw rate rank and turnover worthy plays. So your 2020 champion, Drew Lock, 26 spot difference between his big time throw rate rank and turnover worthy plays. Runner up, Patrick Mahomes. 2019 champion was Jameis Winston. 2018 champion, Ryan Fitzpatrick. And 2017 champion, Deshaun Watson. It holds up, Andrew. It's one of my finer creations. Now, meaningful in fantasy football or even real life context, absolutely not. But red zone is meaningful to my heart and my life. So, you know, that's why we're talking about it right now. I'm with you. Teddy Bridgewater should be starting under center. He is the better NFL quarterback, which is what the Broncos are hoping for. But let's not fall in love with these Broncos weapons and completely freak out, because Teddy was just in one of the best offenses in terms of weapons last year. And we saw what that amounted to: 15 passing touchdowns. Credit to him. Mike, Curtis, DJ, and Robbie all got over 1,000 total yards. If touchdowns are as, you know, fluky or, you know, know, random, as some analysts out there like to say. We could see that boom up to an extent still, though, man. I mean, Teddy just throughout his career, even though he has been an above average quarterback at times, just hasn't really been fantasy. So Judy, hopefully healthy Sutton, hopefully healthy Fant. I think Teddy can enable them, but probably could be one of these situations where Teddy, more of an enabler than a true producer himself. Now, Andrew, we got our most underutilized player, and I don't mean to keep answering these for you, but this one's just easy. He scored 3 touchdowns in training camp today. Tim freaking Patrick, talk to me.
Tim Patrick coming out with the sheesh alert. And I was like, did this guy just steal Ian's shtick? Like, what's going on here?
I'm not the only one allowed to say sheesh. It's okay.
But anyway, Tim Patrick, 9 games last year. I mean, he was pretty much Denver's best wide receiver overall last year. Again, talk about Judy and his struggles as a rookie. But Tim Patrick was the one few light spot that actually put up production in replace of Courtland Sutton. So 9 games, weeks 3 through 14. So I'm excluding the Kendall Hinton debauchery. That game is not existent in any type of analysis that we do when we talk about the Denver Broncos or the New Orleans Saints, because Kendall Hinton is a wide receiver playing quarterback. So the 6'5" Tim Patrick averaged 14.7 fantasy points per game, 21st at the position, and was 3.2 fantasy points over expectation. So he was not only delivering on the opportunities, he was performing above expectation. And I still don't understand why he's on the Broncos. Again, I get why he's on the Broncos because they know he's a good player, but I'm surprised that other teams haven't tried to call. I know that Steve from PFF, from the flagship podcast, had mentioned something about using Tim Patrick as a potential target for the Saints to look at the wide receiver position. I think that would be kind of interesting. But yeah, I mean, he was 15th in yards per route run, 2.15, and he's the wide receiver 4 on an offense, which is just really unfortunate. And you don't necessarily expect him to even start at all with Sutton and Judy as the top 2 guys, with KJ Hamler operating in the slot. So it's a shame that Tim Patrick is buried on this depth chart again. When Seth Williams ended up in Denver, I was like, oh my God, like, he's never going to see the light of day. Now he's behind Tim Patrick. But yeah, Tim Patrick's just super underrated, and hopefully he can get more opportunities.
Yeah, unfortunately, but it's kind of unrelated, but your guy Deontay Harris with that DUI might be suspended, Andrew, so you might want to start looking elsewhere for your favorite complimentary wide receivers to stand. I think Tim Patrick is the best number 4 wide receiver in the NFL. I've said it once, I'll say it again. Better than Gabriel Davis, James Washington. Pains me to say, better than Auden Tate, Zach Pascal, Darius Slayton. Maybe just maybe Scotty Miller as well. The one impressive thing to me about Patrick, you know, I was complaining the other day on Twitter. I tweeted out some Odell Beckham highlights, and everyone just says, oh, it's all against the Cowboys. Like, who cares? Those shouldn't even count. And then no less than 30 minutes later do I have to watch, you know, all of Twitter lose their minds over CeeDee Lamb mossing a Cowboys cornerback in training camp, no less. And that's what apparently matters more than, you know, real life regular games. But if you want to be that guy, you know, and you're watching Jonathan Taylor's and you're saying, it's just against the Jaguars and Texans, who cares? Look at Tim Patrick's game log, because he was not that guy, pal, last year against the freaking Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 4 targets, 4 catches, 43 yards and a touchdown. Jets, 6 catches, 113 yards, touchdown, only 7 targets. Went for 101 yards against your Patriots, 119 yards against the Dolphins. Those are 2 pretty damn good secondaries. 4 catches, 444 yards, 400 yards, 2 touchdowns on 4 targets against the Chiefs. Like, he was putting up big numbers against great defenses, or just being efficient as hell in the limited chances he had. So Tim Patrick, go to New Orleans, go to Detroit, go anywhere where you cannot be this far behind the depth chart. But, you know, it's nothing against, it's great, 4 great wide receivers. So kudos to Denver for building up the situation. Andrew's pointing at his New England hat. That would work as well.
Wouldn't hate it. I would not hate to see Tim Patrick end up in New England.
Would not hate it. All right, Andrew, favorite fantasy value pick from the Denver Broncos.
For me, it's going to be whichever receiver is the cheapest of the top 2 guys, so Courtland Sutton or Jerry Jeudy, because it depends on the format, because I've seen in different settings Courtland Sutton be around ahead of Jerry Jeudy. I've seen Jerry Jeudy sometimes go ahead of Courtland Sutton, and I was just kind of in a super flex draft where basically I was looking at Courtland Sutton as like the highest ranked player, and Jerry Jeudy was a couple spots below him, and I was like, do I go Sutton here, do I go Jeudy here? And ultimately, I was really higher on Sutton originally, but when you just look at how Teddy Bridgewater operates as a quarterback, very timing based, he's a lot less likely to kind of throw into contested catches or contested situations, which is really more what Sutton's game is. It seems like Jerry Jeudy might be a better fit for Teddy Bridgewater, whereas Drew Lock might be a better fit for Courtland Sutton. Again, it's not to say Courtland Sutton can't ball out with whoever he's at a quarterback. I mean, he really hasn't that many great quarterbacks in his career up to this point anyway. So again, this is not a knock on Courtland Sutton, but the value is still in Jerry Jeudy. And again, the guy had no accurate targets last year, third worst mark in the league in terms of accurate targets thrown his way. And we saw Teddy Bridgewater do this with another receiver. It was Curtis Samuel in 2019. Super inaccurate targets thrown his way. He gets Teddy Bridgewater. Bridgewater has his completion percentage rise up to number one in the NFL last year, 86% of catchable targets for Curtis Samuel in 2020. So Jerry Jeudy, I think he's really built to bounce back. And he's the greatest top 10 separator already in the NFL, according to the Denver Broncos general manager. So, yeah, I mean, if that's not, I mean, coach speaks one thing, but GM speak, oof, Ian, that's a whole other ballgame.
I don't disagree with the call. I mean, Jeudy's wide receiver cornerback tape is already borderline erotic. The problem last year was drops. And as we tell you guys every other podcast, don't need to worry about the drops. That's why Deontay Johnson is my wide receiver freaking 15 this year. I'm going to go with the actual cheapest receiver in this offense that will be starting. And that is KJ Hamler, who last year, I mean, coming out as a 46th overall pick, a lot of people were excited about this guy. I mean, he, you know, just one of those guys that is truly fast. I know he's not the biggest guy in the world, but they drafted him in the second round to be a starter, and he really was as soon as he was healthy. The problem was that wasn't the case to start the year. Week one inactive, finally gets back on the field for 2 weeks, starting to make some things happen, immediately misses two more games. And when you look at a season-long stat line, this is why, you know, I do agree, like, going off per game is better than cumulative season-long stats. But as you brought up with the Kendall Hinton game, like, we still need to go even deeper a lot of times with these guys. So in Hamler's case, he technically played 13 games, but two of those games was where he either got hurt or just wasn't. He played fewer than 20% of the offensive snaps, fluky. And then we have the Kendall Hinton game. So reality, 56 targets in 10 games. That's a 90 target pace, man. That's not insignificant. And to your point, Teddy did enable Curtis Samuel and Robbie and DJ could feasibly be three wide receivers. So Hamler, like, I understand why he's going behind Jeudy and Sutton, but you can't draft many just proven number. I wouldn't say he's proven, but he's locked in as their number three starting wide receiver. And a lot of the guys he's going next to, it's like the Josh Palmers of the world. We're like, we're hoping they're a number three eventually. I think Hamler has that more locked in. So nothing crazy, but when you're looking for a wide receiver at the bottom of that draft, just realize Hamler, big play potential. We can see them get him more design touches, like similar, not Debo Samuel-esque. He's way smaller than Debo. But in terms of having Locke or Bridgewater, I think Hamler's targets would probably be the most stable compared to other guys. Because, yeah, we got to worry about contested catches and stuff like that. But what easier way to get someone the ball than on those jet sweeps that we know Hamler can make big things happen with? Andrew, let's talk some running backs now. What's your wild card scenario? And do you got a running back combo for me?
So we got Melvin Gordon getting his butt cut from the Denver Broncos before week one so we can unleash Javonte Williams' will onto the Denver Broncos, because this is just a perfect fit for him. Again, Javonte Williams, super explosive rookie coming out of UNC, shared a backfield with Michael Carter, but he was the 1A in the 1B or in the two-man backfield. He's super explosive. His missed tackle rate was nearly off the charts. Again, last year we were talking about Antonio Gibson and how great his missed tackle rate was on like 90 touches. We're like, it's a small sample size. Like, maybe it doesn't mean that much. Javonte Williams basically put up the exact same missed tackle rate, except it was on twice as many touches. So again, if that's telling you anything, if you're a big Antonio Gibson fan, you should be in on Javonte Williams. And if he follows that type of same path, okay, we saw Antonio Gibson, Darius Geis was in front of him, Adrian Peterson in front of him. They were both gone by the time week one happened. So Javonte Williams, PFF's number one inside zone power runner in 2020. Broncos finished second in inside zone power runs in 2020. So I think the fit is perfect. And if Javonte Williams is that main guy, like second round pick, third, like he's going to be a running back that you're definitely going to want on your team.
That'd be expected, you know, bell cow usage there, because, you know, they also brought in Mike Boone. It wouldn't make sense if they cut Gordon. I mean, that late season DUI, he didn't get found guilty, but it got dismissed. And, you know, I was reading, wasn't a Denver Post or something, reading that George Patton, who wasn't in his position of power at that point when it occurred. But apparently, if he was going to get a guilty plea and they could really get rid of the guarantees, like, he was very close to being cut. And when you look at it, okay, they brought in Boone, they brought in Williams. it could be a competition between Melvin Gordon and Royce Freeman. And if they cut Gordon, they're going to save about twice as much as they would if they end up cutting Freeman. So that's a lot of running back moves that they've made this offseason to not, move on from Gordon as their starter. This is, again, a situation where if you look at his totals last year, they weren't that bad. But if you actually watch the games and then look at how he did per game compared to some of the other guys, anyone's idea of, average to below average running back at best. So I love it, Andrew. I had the exact same thing written down. We don't share notes before these podcasts, and are both of our wild card scenario.
It's the same thing as the Nick Chubb, Carlos Hyde thing. It's like the exact same scenario.
James Robinson without the draft capital for James.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. But that's why Melvin Gordon has an ADP at all, is because he's like the starter, quote unquote. But we can all read between the lines. Like he has an expiring contract. Like why are they be like, we're gonna feature Melvin Gordon after we trade up for this rookie running back that's like super explosive. Like come on, let's do that.
What are we doing here? Andrew, over under 8.5 wins. There's a -130 lean on the over, which surprised me. What do you got?
I'm gonna go on the under because it's quarterback play. Yeah. It sucks because Denver is loaded basically all across the board, but quarterbacks drive wins in sports or in football specifically. Quarterbacks drive wins, and I think that at the time these numbers were kind of like out at 8.5, it had like that potential that Aaron Rodgers could potentially end up in Denver. So I think that is actually kind of like artificially inflated to an extent. So for me, I'm gonna go with the under.
Yeah, just the fact the over is juiced like that, which again surprised me. I'll take the under as well. Maybe they can get there with Teddy playing ball control ball and this defense taking a step forward, obviously getting, hopefully finally getting a full season of Von Miller and Bradley Chubb just wreaking havoc right next to each other would be great. Patrick Surtain and Kyle Fuller should help the secondary calm down a little bit moving forward. But again, it's about quarterbacks, and they're just as well, we talked about the NFC West last time. We couldn't stop talking about how good every team is. I think we're also going to see that there's quite a few good offenses here in this division. And unfortunately, the Broncos, I think, aren't going to be able to keep up in more shootouts than not. Moving right along to the Kansas City Chiefs, who will be the ones with all that scoring firepower anytime they play the Broncos and everyone else. Let's talk running backs, Andrew. Why is our defining question, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, will he be the guy that we thought he could be in 2020?
Because last year he could not have run worse at the goal line. Like it was basically like ice cold Clyde Edwards-Helaire at the goal line. He converted just 10 of his carries inside the 5-yard line into two touchdowns. That's all he got. And despite that fact, he was RB11 through the first 6 weeks of the season, 16 fantasy points per game, 21.3 touches per game, 505 rushing yards over the start of the year, ranked second in the league. So for me, I think that you're going to see that touchdown regression kind of baked in to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think he's going to score more in 2021 because, again, this offense is going to find chances to score because it's led by Patrick Mahomes. I'm not worried about them not being able to move the ball down the field, and Edwards-Helaire is going to benefit the most from it. I think that he's going to find a way to score touchdowns this season. And look, they're talking about using him more in the pass game, and I believe that. Last season he was 10th in routes run per game among running backs, so he was already being deployed in that manner. It was just about using him more in the getting him more of actual targets. And I think that Andy Reid is actually talking about actively like adding more to his plate, then that's going to include more targets coming his way. So again, in the third round, I think he was actually hidden here as one of my best values. So yeah, Edwards-Helaire, I think, is a really great pick.
And the one thing people seem to just not even be paying attention to on the goal line, like if he was 2 for 10 and the rest of the Chiefs were like 8 for 8, like that'd be a very reasonable critique to have. Why was it so much harder for Clyde? Le'Veon, Darryl, Darwin, DeAndre, they all went 1 for 6 inside the 5-yard line. They couldn't score either. And, this is an offense like the Packers that we see, really like to pass the ball when they get inside the 5-yard line. So I'm not saying Clyde necessarily has like 15 rushing touchdowns in his potential range of outcomes. But before Le'Veon got there, only Joe Mixon, Zeke, and Derrick Henry had more touches than Clyde. I think just the history of Andy Reid's RBs, if we can just zoom out a little bit, shows us all we need to know. Because last year, Clyde, RB21. Before that, Damian, RB25. But people before that, Kareem Hunt, RB8, RB5. Random Spencer Ware, RB17 year. Jamal Charles, RB2, RB7, RB1. LeSean McCoy, RB8. RB3, Brian Westbrook, RB1, RB1, RB4, RB7, RB5. The better part of the past two decades, Andy Reid has had a high-scoring fantasy back. Don't let a 2-year blimp that was really I mean, once we zoom in on it more, we can see how much injuries and just adding, you know, players to the equation impacted it. What bigger sign do we need that the Chiefs are committed to Clyde by not drafting someone, not bringing in any other competition than Jerick McKinnon, who we had a legit, his legs are sore report on going on halfway through.
His legs
through.
Were tired.
He's tired. Even difference. Worse. Even worse. Thank you. Good correction. And that's the guy.
Some coffee.
That's the guy. That's the guy that's gonna stop Clyde. Get out of here with that. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is right where I've, you know, been. I think I have him as like my RB14, but literally like I group him in with the rest of those guys. And after we get by him, that's when I'm taking wide receivers. But I would put Clyde right in there in that top 14, top 15 running backs that you should be comfortable taking in the first two rounds of fantasy drafts of all shapes and sizes.
Collider, Antonio Gibson.
Gibson, I have them right next to each other though.
Yeah, same thing that I have Gibson, just the edge.
Yeah, but both guys in the top 15, absolutely. All right, Andrew, it's Mecole Hardman time. Tell me why he's so damn underutilized, unless he's your fantasy value pick. And then, you know, I have him listed for both. Let's talk some Mecole Hardman.
The Chiefs are really hard to put in superlatives because they're all really good. Because you have like four top guys. Like, all right, well, we got to figure out what to talk about. So whatever. No rules but the Chiefs. So most underutilized player. So again, Mecole Hardman. And I just think that he showed growth last year when a lot of people were just disappointed because he just didn't explode. Like, what is he supposed to do? Like, there are two alphas on the team. Like, he's making the most of the opportunities that he gets. And when he was running more routes last year, again, what we call a PFF threat rate, you know, target rate per route run, it increased by 42%, 14.4% to 19% from year one to year two. Second highest rate increase among all wide receivers. Only Robbie Anderson saw a higher increase in target rate per route run. So that tells you right there. Mahomes is literally looking for him more often than his rookie year in his second season. That is growth. So again, the efficiency metrics are all there. You know, he's one of the top in terms of passer rating, generating when targeted, because he has Mahomes and he's targeted downfield and he catches a lot of touchdowns. And like, those are all things that we like. So cool off of Mecole Hardman hate when he just doesn't explode on three targets or four targets a game. Like, chill out, because I think that he can have a chance to have standalone potential in this offense. And also, if anything does happen to Tyreek Hill, if anything does happen to Travis Kelce, like, he's the next man up. That is somewhat proven in this offense. So I think Mecole Hardman, again, super underutilized, but I think we're going to see it all kind of come together in year three.
Last 2 years, only have eight players that have averaged 10 yards per target, minimum 100 targets. Justin Jefferson, AJ Brown, Will Fuller, Chris Godwin, Kenny Galladay, Stephon Diggs, Mike Williams, and Mecole Hardman. Actually, number three on that list behind only AJ, B, and Jefferson. Does he look like the potential exception on this list? Yes, I, you know, was pimping a similar list all last summer for Chris Herndon, and now I realize he was the exception to the rule on that list. But look where all those guys are being drafted, and Mike Williams is really the only other guy that's not going inside the top like 20, and that's why he's a value as well, and we'll get to that later. But Mecole, like, what was the issue last year? Sammy Watkins being there. And yeah, okay, when Sammy was out a little bit too, we saw Pringle and Robinson getting a little more involved. But Watkins was the main problem, and now he's gone, and he's cheaper than he was, man. Last year, per Fantasy Football Calculator, Mecole finished the year, I mean, went into the year as the wide receiver 43 in full point per reception scoring. Right now, he's wide receiver 47. So the biggest issue is gone, and the guy who was already, you know, just a value, it's not like he lost your draft because he took Mecole Hardman and around 10 or 11 last year. Now he's even a few spots cheaper. So Mecole, you know, he didn't live up to it in 2020. 2021's a new year. We can get the guy even cheaper than before. So Andrew, do you have another value pick? Or are you also in on Mecole where he's going?
So yeah, Mecole, I don't mind where he's going. So my value pick was Edwards-Helaire. So I'll shift back up to my defining question. Because again, we're going to just, there's no rules when it comes to the Chiefs. And one of my questions was, Is Kelce worthy of being drafted where he is? So I've seen him go as early as 3, 5. And again, it could depend on the format that you're in. But I think that we're baking a lot of that ADP into him just being exactly what he was last year. Like being this stalwart option that was beyond better than every other tight end. And I just don't know if that's going to necessarily be the case. So the past three, I mean, it's basically been the past 5 seasons, Kelce's been the tight end one, but looking back at the past 3 seasons, so 2018, he scored 1.4 fantasy points per game more than the second tight end. 2019, it was 2.3, and 2020, it was 4.6. So it's literally doubled in 3 consecutive seasons. And I just have some concerns that we're chasing after last year's production. I don't know if that's necessarily the right move, because if you look at expected fantasy points, so he was second in terms of the tight end position in fantasy points scored above expectation. Again, part of that reason is because he's good. So take that into consideration. But he also had career high in touchdowns and red zone targets. So that's one thing that I want to look at. And we just talked about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So if Clyde Edwards-Helaire scores more of these rushing touchdowns, you talked about the other running backs too. Like, they all struggled to score touchdowns. So where did those touchdowns go? Oh, right. They went to Travis Kelce. Like, that's where they went into the offense. So for me, I'm going to look at Kelce as a middle first round pick. And then I see Darren Waller, who scored the most fantasy points per game among all players from weeks 13 to 17, or George Kittle in round three. I like the value of those guys better as elite tight ends that can finish tight end one at the position. Again, Kelce's been the guy, but I do think that there are two other options that can do it as well, and they don't cost a middle of the first round option. So that's just one something I want to share about Travis Kelce.
Right now, I've had a couple people ask me, like, if they can start their fantasy drafts anywhere, like, what would you want to do? And right now, I would like to go spot one, get Christian McCaffrey, loop around, freaking pray to whatever God you believe in that Darren Waller is still there for you at the end of round two. Get Waller or even Kittle at that point. And then you'll have an awesome wide receiver still sitting there at pick 25. So that's my favorite kind of just general. If I have whatever pick I want in a 12-team league, that's what I want. Are you with me there, Andrew? Or is there another spot you've been liking?
Yeah, no, I think that McCaffrey and Cook are just no doubt players, just in terms of the volume that they get among running backs. Like, even like, I think Zeke is kind of close to that territory too, but I know some people have some concerns about Ezekiel Elliott just because, is he good anymore? I don't know. But again, like, you want Christian McCaffrey, like you can pick, like, you want him because it has the potential to basically be two players on your roster. Like, there are really good running backs, and we talked about some of them already today, but he's on another level.
Over under 12 and a half wins. Minus 125, lean on the under. Where you got him?
Are we not doing the wild card? Are we skipping it?
Oh, my bad. Wild card. I think Byron Pringle could potentially be the number two receiver on this team. Only two career games, more than five targets. One of them, six catches, 103 yards, and a score. That was in that Colts game from a couple years ago where they didn't have Tyreek, and Mahomes still made that insane play to Byron Pringle. Also had another game, four catches, 52 yards, and a touchdown. The Chiefs love him. You know, we've been getting these glowing reports about him all offseason. And, you know, we gave Clyde the benefit of the doubt, saying, hey, they let Le'Veon Bell go. They didn't feel a need to really replace him. The same thing can be said for Mecole Hardman, or maybe should it be said for Byron Pringle. Only guy they really added was Cornell Powell in round five, who I like, and I have to actually taken Cornell Powell at the very end of some drafts, but still a fifth round pick that didn't really do anything of substance at Clemson until he was a redshirt senior, I believe. So Byron Pringle, just if you want to buy into some of his offseason coach speak, is someone that I think could, you know, at least has a 40% chance of being the guy you want Mecole Hardman to be at a fraction of the price. So, you know, you could also call it the favorite fantasy value pick. As Andrew said, all the rules are out the window when we're talking on the Chiefs. But Byron Pringle could be the number three receiver behind Kelce and Tyreek on the Chiefs this year, and it shouldn't come as a huge surprise.
Once you pop, the fun don't stop. Pringles. Byron Pringle. That was the same guy I had as a wild card because I cannot buy any... I can't do DeMarcus Robinson. I just can't do it. No. So with him, I'd rather just take Pringle in my last pick than take DeMarcus Robinson. Just the guy they just have him to block. Like, that's what he does. And he's actually gotten opportunities too. And he just doesn't do any, like, I don't understand how bad his efficiency metrics are. Again, I think it goes back to because he's run blocking a lot of the time, but yeah, give me Pringle over Robinson and your guy Powell.
12 and a half wins, minus 125, lean on the under. What do you got, Andrew?
Again, the math probably says go under, and it probably makes sense, but I don't really care because they have Patrick Mahomes, so I'm going to go with the over here. Again, in my time of, like, the past 20 years in living in New England, I could have just been betting the Patriots overs and just making money all these years, and I just never did. And now I'm not going to miss that opportunity with Mahomes because he's the best quarterback, and these teams win a lot of games. So again, it's not going to surprise me at all if Chiefs go 14-3, 15-2. Those just really sound really weird to me because of the 17-game season. So I'm going to go over.
I'm going to go under. I do think they go like 12-5, still win division and all that. It is kind of funky how often they can come out on top in these close games. And yeah, I guess having the best quarterback we've maybe ever seen can be that trump card for you. But last year, for them to go 14-2 and only have, you know, an expected win loss of 10.5 and 5.5, I mean, it just tells you they weren't quite as dominant as a lot of our teams out there. And I remember I got, you know, ripped alive because I did this like before the playoffs, like who's the most complete team. I didn't add any extra weight to the quarterback. So it was a decent article idea if you knew the kind of theory behind it.
Colts are number one, right? Colts are up there.
Yeah, and of course the PFF Twitter account just goes, all right, Ian Harsh's most complete teams, Colts number one. It's like, God, but... Anyway, throughout that, and if you do stuff like that, and if you look at the pass offense, the run offense, the blocking, the, you know, different levels of defense, you know, really break these teams down into eight separate categories. Like, yeah, they need Patrick Mahomes to continue to be the world beater he's always been because he's covering up for a hell of a lot of issues throughout the rest of the team. And, you know, we all know the salary cap apparently doesn't exist in Kansas City. Chill out. I know it exists, people, but they do a good, very good job getting around it. They are still, you know, one of these stars and scrubs teams. And I think that can be risky business where you're one injury away from being in a much worse spot than a lot of other teams. So I'm going to go slight under. I still, you know, would call the Chiefs the Super Bowl favorites overall, and particularly to come out of the AFC. So nothing against them, you know, in a one game situation, but I do think we're going to see them take a little bit of a step back in terms of just the sort of win-loss regular season dominance that we saw in 2020. People, before we move on, we have some very important ads to get to. I want to give a shout out to our friends at Fantrax. Fantrax is NFL Fantasy Football League Manager. Is the most customizable, easy to use, and feature rich platform in the entire industry. PFF is gearing up to play our leagues on Fantrax this season. One of my favorite features is that you can actually auto generate player salaries for your league. I mean, you can literally customize this any way you want. Also, contract options, you can make your keepers all funky, whatever you're into, whichever league you're in, you can customize it exactly the way you want. If you're coming from another site, no problem at all. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues. Sign up and play now at fantrax.com/PFF and get this, people. Get a chance to win a free autographed jersey from Josh Allen. That is fantrax.com/PFF, the home of fantasy sports. Go get you that Josh Allen jersey. Also, got to give a shout out to our new sponsor, friends over at Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming champions of the world. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped just launched their fourth-generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you, 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% free shipping. Manscaped.com, code PFF, unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Next up, Andrew, we have the consensus worst team in this division, Las Vegas Raiders. John Gruden, what's that website? How long is John Gruden here or whatever? And it's telling you how much money he's making. Always funny. I will say, for those that don't watch many Raiders games, I don't blame you, but as much flack as John Gruden gets with everything, the guy is still a great play caller, and you can really tell that in the first, you know, 15, 20 plays of every game when they're still scripting things out. Unfortunately, when your defense is giving up 30 per game and you're, you know, a top 10 offense, but much closer to 10 than one, tough to win football games in the NFL. So, Andrew, what is your defining question for the 2021 Las Vegas Raiders?
My defining question is, can Darren Waller finish as the tight end one in fantasy football and dethrone Travis Kelce in the same division? It's wild that I'm tying these two things together, but of course that's what I'm going to bring. Always bringing the fire on the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. And here is the plan for Darren Waller. Okay, so last year, 25 red zone targets, third most in the NFL, only caught 6 for touchdowns. So retrospect, Travis Kelce was up north of 10, and some of the other players, again, Devontae Adams was above 10 touchdowns. Nelson Aguilar left the team. His 36% end zone target share was the highest by any player that switched teams this offseason. So there's an opportunity for more end zone targets for Darren Waller to potentially scoop up. You talked about Derek Carr, how he's underrated. He is underrated vastly. And his touchdown percentage was really low in the red zone last year. 16.8% was actually the low of his career. It was lower than his four-year rolling average, 21%, and the league average, which is 23%, which is again, it's kind of one of those fluky stats. I mean, you look at it, well, it's because Josh Jacobs scored like a million touchdowns last year rushing the ball. So for me, I see that this is an opportunity for Waller to potentially have a spike in touchdown production, because that's obviously what vaulted Travis Kelce for another year to be such an advantageous option at the tight end position. And I think that's why Waller could potentially finish as a tight end one. The Raiders are going to have to throw a lot more, I think, than they would like to. They have the most difficult schedule based on Vegas implied win totals. So I do think that they're going to have to throw the ball more aggressively. And that's going to hurt Josh Jacobs, who we'll probably talk about. Like Josh Jacobs, I think it was Graham Barfield from fantasypoints.com. He tweeted out the splits between Josh Jacobs and like wins, and it was like 21 points per game, and losses, it's like 10, because he doesn't score touchdowns. So yeah, in those cases, if the Raiders are losing a bunch of games, I think it's going to be the Darren Waller show. I think that's going to lead him to catching more touchdowns, whether they're garbage time or not. I do think that Waller has a chance to unseat Travis Kelce as a tight end one this season. And if he doesn't, if he just matches him, then okay, you got him in the second round, so you're already feeling good about it.
Yeah, I've definitely, you know, come on, I'm not ranking Waller over Kelce. Let's not get crazy here, people. But
no, that's fair. And again, I have Kelce, but it's the price.
They're in the same tier. Like since 2019, Kelce has 269 targets. Waller has 255. If those touchdowns just swing a little bit in his favor, and you're like, you're talking about some of these regression analysis tell us that they might, we could see Waller knock off the king of the fantasy tight end world. And yeah, man, I just don't really see this defense doing anything about better this year, which means they should be passing the ball even more often against a schedule that seemingly will be up on them more often. So last year, the Raiders were tied with the Titans for the largest ranking differential between scoring offense and scoring defense. And I think we're going to see that happen again, man. So the big thing for me is, can Derek Carr make a Ryan Tannehill-esque eighth-year leap? I don't think the answer is yes to the same extent as Tannehill, and especially in fantasy land, Carr just doesn't run enough to really be relevant. And the way the Raiders are so slow paced, we just don't see these big explosions from Carr. But when he focuses all his targets on Waller, everything's fine. But put some respect on Derek Carr's name. I mean, yards per attempt last year, he was tied for 6th, tied for 9th in adjusted completion rate, tied for 5th in big time throw rate, and number 8 overall among 44 qualified quarterbacks in PFF passing grades. So, you know, he doesn't chuck the ball like downfield a ton, I get it, but he has gotten better. And I believe I had a stat for it to put it more in perspective. Usually try to, but yeah, all right, last year, so overall he's only 28th ranked in average target depth when he has been pressured under 2.5 seconds. So that is the problem for Carr, because if this offensive line takes a step back, which judging for some of their offseason moves, losing Rodney Hudson and things like that, looking like he could, if he starts getting pressured a lot, that's where I'm concerned for the rest of the offense. But damn, man, they can keep this guy upright, maybe Ruggs, maybe Bryan Edwards start to show us a little something, I think we could again be looking at a top 10 scoring offense. So credit to Carr for even putting them in that conversation. Andrew, most underutilized player. Let's talk some Henry Ruggs, right?
I was going to mention Josh Jacobs here.
Okay,
just that's fine. He's not involved in the passing game enough, and they signed Kenyon Drake. So it's basically like any hope that we had, because Jacobs is explosive in the passing game. Like, this is how he was used at Alabama. And that's why, again, like you mentioned Henry Ruggs, like that's why I'm concerned that they can talk about using Ruggs in this way and that way from Alabama. They didn't do that with Josh Jacobs. This is the same freaking thing. So if they didn't want to use Josh Jacobs like how he was used at Alabama, like, why should we believe that they're going to do the same thing to Henry Ruggs? So I'll lead it to you then with Ruggs.
Yeah, I mean, I understand targets can be more of a factor of getting open, but to never throw the guy that you deem the best wide receiver in the draft more than 5 targets in a game when he's, you know, averaging 10.5 yards per target, 17.4 yards per catch. I mean, good things generally happen when they threw the ball to Ruggs. They just played Nelson Aguilar over him. So it kind of looks to me like a Mecole Hardman situation, though, man. Like, the issue for Ruggs last year was Nelson Aguilar. They let him go, wanted him back, whatever. Only brought in John Brown. Yeah, it is actually more than the Chiefs brought in. It's not a one-to-one. But either way, Ruggs is in a better situation now than he was last year just by having Aguilar out of the picture. And he's going as the wide receiver 49. This year compared to wide receiver 42 last year. So again, someone that I think where he's going in drafts, you're looking at a decent enough value. Will he actually get those targets to come to fruition? I don't know, because man, we already got Gruden coming out here complimenting, you know, not the receivers we want him to, saying Smokey Brown still has those jets. podcast, and they had to note that Zay Jones is the best conditioned player on the Raiders. So I'm just worried we see another issue of last year where, man, I was literally looking, you know, prepping for this podcast, and I see Henry Ruggs never having more than 5 targets. Brian Edwards never having more than 3 targets. And I was like, who the hell did have targets on this team last year? And my lights just went out. That's kind of spooky. Wow, that's a sign, man. Darren Waller, 180 targets confirmed. Oh, did this die? Sorry about that, everyone. Had a massive bolt of lightning go off and briefly knock off my power right as I was getting into how there's so many available targets for Darren Waller this year because they don't chuck it to their wide receivers. And people, I was about to say he can clear 150 targets. And then God came down and said, to hell with that. He's sending us that lightning. Maybe 200 targets is on the table for Darren Waller this year. I don't know. Maybe we should start, you know, evaluating when lightning's getting struck during podcasts into our rankings, Andrew. But oh man, what do you think
about Darren Waller? I mean, I love Darren Waller. I think that he's going to be, like, again, like I talked about it already earlier, just I think he has a chance to be the tight end one this year. It's weird to think that the tight end two, the consensus for the most part, except Nathan Yonke, who's firmly on the George Kittle tight end too, which again, I don't necessarily totally disagree with it, but again, the value is there with Waller at the end of the second round and even sometimes the third round. So
is the answer to which wide receiver to draft in Las Vegas just no? That's pretty much the question.
For the most part, again, when I went back and watched Brian Edwards, Henry Ruggs, try to figure out, okay, like, do any of these guys like have a chance to break out? And again, like, Ruggs was underwhelming. Like, Edwards just didn't play enough. Like, he was better before he got hurt. And Edwards, you know, he was my wild card. But again, he had 100% catch rate on his catchable targets, 142.6 passer rating, which was fifth best in the NFL last year. Again, it was only 14 targets that he saw last year. But he was efficient on his targets that he at least saw. But at the end of the day, my main takeaway was Darren Waller is like Derek Carr's like only option. He's like, right, drop back, throw. Okay, Darren Waller. Like, where is Darren Waller? Like, he targets Darren Waller like his life depends on it. And that's going to continue into 2021 until they make a splash at receiver or something like that. Just they haven't really done that yet. And none of these guys scream like, target me, like I'm a target magnet. Darren Waller is that target magnet.
Darren Waller, elite player, elite target getter. Sounds like an elite fantasy football draft pick to me. Andrew, do you have a wild card scenario for our 2021 Las Vegas Raiders?
We'll go with Kenyon Drake. Outscores Josh Jacobs.
Wow. Back to back, right on the same page. Go off, sir.
Yeah, because it's just the usage that Kenyon Drake could see in this offense as the potential pass catching back, I think just favors out over the season more than Josh Jacobs. We already talked about how the Raiders have one of the most difficult schedules. We've talked about how Josh Jacobs struggles when the team loses games. If Kenyon Drake is the pass catching back from 2017, 2019, Drake, 12th in overall targets among running backs, averaged nearly 60 targets per season. If Drake is getting these looks in the passing game, again, he also has shown that he can pick up the slack on early downs as well. So Drake, again, I hate to knock on Jacobs because I think that he's the superior talent, but at the same time, unless John Gruden pulls a full reversal and makes Josh Jacobs the freaking pass catching back and turns Kenyon Drake into his Cardinals role, which I don't think is going to happen, then Kenyon Drake is just the better value you can get really late. And if Jacobs gets hurt, okay, boom, like Kenyon Drake's probably going to take on a 3-down workload. Again, not in a great offense, but you don't necessarily need that. You need volume. And Kenyon Drake is really a good value, like outside the top 40 running backs.
If we're assuming it's going to be more of a 1-2 punch than in past years, I mean, Jacobs last year had 45 targets, Jalen Richard and Devontae Booker combined for 44. So we have this 90 target pie that if Drake is the lead receiving back, we would seemingly, you know, expect him maybe get 66% of it or so. If we're talking about 60 targets plus 100, 150 early down carries, that I think would be enough of a shift in the target share for Drake to potentially beat out Josh Jacobs. So I continue to not touch Jacobs even as a low-end RB2 at this point. I just don't think the upside is worth the cost for a likely atrocious Raiders team. But Kenyon Drake is the guy where when I see him in the mid-RB30s range and I only have, you know, one running back by this point in the draft, I don't hate him because he is kind of in that A.J. Dillon, Jamal Williams, like Latavius Murray role of like handcuff plus backs. We could still get some solid flex value. And then if the starter does go down, I mean, we're looking at a legit 80, 90% snap rate potentially, where he could work as an RB1 based on volume and volume alone. So Kenyon Drake, lead fantasy football back, heard it here first. Maybe it's a wild card, so don't freak out, everybody. Over under, Andrew, is set at 7 -110 both ways. What are you feeling?
I'm going on the under. Yeah. I don't like the schedule. And we talked about how good Carr was last year. I'm afraid that even if he comes down a little bit from his performance, then that's going to be not enough to help this team win a lot of games. Like, again, they've won more games since John Gruden started there, but this could be the season where things kind of unravel and it's like, okay, like we signed this guy to a 10-year contract. Why? So yeah, I don't think that Carr, again, he's underrated. I do think he's a good real life quarterback, but I don't know if he's going to be able to do enough to increase the total output of this offense to make up for the bad defense and questionable coaching. So I'm going to take the under.
Raiders defense rank in points per game allowed since drafting Carr in 2014, 32nd, 22nd, 20th, 20th, 32nd, 24th, 30th, all combined 32nd. I got the under as well. I see the offense taking a slight step back. I still think they'll be an above average unit, but I don't think they're going to necessarily be top 10 again. Defense, I don't see them taking much of a step forward. With that, you get a below average team. You know, six or fewer wins is, you know, asking them to be pretty bad, but I don't know, man, if the shoe fits in this division, I think we should probably be fading most Raiders other than our guy, Darren Waller, in fantasy leagues of all shapes and sizes. Andrew, we've reached the final team, Los Angeles Chargers. It would have been more fitting for the Lightning to go off, you know, while we were talking about the Chargers, but it is what it is. Let's talk defining question for the 2021 edition.
2021 question for the Los Angeles Chargers: year two leap for Herbert or regression? I know you talked about this on the quarterbacks podcast that you did with Rich Rebar. So again, I'll just kind of reiterate a little bit of what you guys talked about. And I do think that regression is definitely a concern for Justin Herbert. Again, his passer rating under pressure was better than his passer rating from a clean pocket. It's not necessarily a great indication of future play. Again, the offensive line is vastly improved. I think that's really important to call out. Okay, finished 30th in PFF pass blocking grade last year, 32nd in run blocking grade. They've revamped it with all new additions through the draft and through free agency. They've talked about using more of the new offensive coaching staffs, talked about using Herbert's athleticism and arm talent, which again, bodes well potentially for fantasy, but it comes down to the price in which you have to pay for Justin Herbert versus some of these other quarterbacks in that tier. I know you guys talked about Jalen Hurts, talked about Joe Burrow. And if Herbert is the clear cut, you know, QB six, I think is kind of where he fall in our consensus rankings. I still think that's a little bit high. I mean, he's in the same tier as a lot of those other guys for me with Burrow, with Jalen Hurts. So for me, again, if they're going three or four rounds later, I think that's ultimately where you want to go. I don't think Herbert's going to like nuke your team necessarily, but at the same time, I don't know if he really has a lot of top five upside. I mean, like, he was a top 10 quarterback last year, but other quarterbacks throw more, other quarterbacks run more. And again, there probably will be some type of regression you can expect for Justin Herbert. So again, I think the value is not really there for him, so I probably won't draft that much Herbert.
5.2% touchdown rate, certainly a number that, hey, maybe Herbert is even better than he looked last year, but that's going to be a tough rate to beat. 5 rushing touchdowns, that's a mark he met just once at Oregon. You know, he is a pass first quarterback, great for the Los Angeles Chargers offense, maybe not so much for his future fantasy success. And yeah, I think everything he said about, you know, some of the more stable metrics and him just not really proving that he can dominate from those spots yet. I know not having Anthony Lynn there is probably going to help the play calling of it and just, you know, when they're actually throwing the ball. But even then, man, first and second down passes last year, Herbert was the 17th highest graded quarterback. First read passes, 17th, 29th from a clean pocket. Like, it's not even just how good he was under pressure, it's how average he really not was. Yeah, borderline not good in some of these other situations. So yeah, like if the pressure comes back to earth, like that's going to be a problem. But the bigger problem might be if he continues to be more average to not good in the more stable situations. So obviously weapons everywhere. The offensive line could help. I see the path, but I'm with you. I haven't gotten much Herbert throughout this offseason. I have him ranked 7th. I think 8th, I just moved Rodgers back in front of him. But really, after Russell Wilson and Rodgers, I'm more inclined to wait until the rookies come around and then maybe get Cousins or Fitzpatrick or Baker later. It's almost, you know, I don't want to call it the QB dead zone, but really from Herbert to kind of like Stafford, those are the guys that I'm just not finding myself taking a lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, we still are going to advocate a late round quarterback approach unless you can get a guy that is elite. And yeah. I don't know. Look, Herbert's had one season. So, and it was really good, but you know, top 10, he was a top 10 quarterback. He wasn't a top three quarterback. Like, I think that's an important, you know, difference to make. And that I don't know if he necessarily has this top five upside, like a lot of the other quarterbacks do. And if you have to get him at seven, it's just a little pricey.
PFF Seth has got to be just, you know, fingers crossed, come back to earth, Herbert, quit making that one damn quote look so bad. I love every single one of Seth's articles. I hope for Seth's sake almost that Herbert does just have one average year and he can get some of the haters off his back, but he'll keep doing him regardless. Keep tearing up those flag football fields in Canada, Seth. Okay. Most underutilized player, and why is it freaking number one fan of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast himself, Mike Williams. He didn't say that, but he did come on the pod, and you all should check it out if you did.
Mike Williams is not my most underutilized player. Andrew. I think Mike Williams gets decent. We'll talk about it. He's my favorite value. So my most underutilized player is Austin Eckler. And it just goes to the point of, I want him to see the premium touches at the goal line. Like, that's what I want to see from Austin Eckler. You know, we've talked about the offensive coordinator, Joe Lombardi, coming in here. He's talked about using Eckler. He's compared Eckler to Reggie Bush, Darren Sproles, Alvin Kamara. Like, that's what we get with Eckler, is an Alvin Kamara type ceiling, where Alvin Kamara just doesn't get the crappy touches that have no fantasy value whatsoever in between the 20s. But when they're in the red zone, he's getting carries, he's getting targets. And that's what I want to see from Austin Eckler. That's going to vault him to be a top five running back. I know that we're really high on Austin Eckler at PFF, especially in terms of PPR. Because look, 2019, he was the RB4 overall. Last year with Justin Herbert under center, 19.1 fantasy points per game, which was sixth, 18 touches per game, that was ninth. You know, his per game pace would have put him over 100 catches in a 16 game season with Justin Herbert under center. So, and again, I also checked those splits too with Keenan Allen, and there really wasn't too big of a disparity between them. So I don't know if there's necessarily a connection between those players being active, because I know that there were some times where some of those guys missed time. But yeah, Austin Eckler, that's how he hits his ceiling. Like, again, he's not someone you need to spend a top five pick on. Again, he goes at the end of the first round, beginning in the second round. And again, some people might be kind of shooken off of him just a bit because he's not this like workhorse guy. So you look at like a Joe Mixon or a Najee Harris. But again, it goes back to how he makes up ground is because the majority of his touches are receptions, are targets out of the backfield. And if he gets those touches near the goal line, which again, Joshua Kelly, Justin Jackson, my guy, LR3, Larry Roundtree, III. Like, I'm not sure where those guys are really going to fall in the pecking order. I mean, those guys are not established whatsoever. So why would you give them really touches anyway? We could just give them to Austin Eckler.
Yeah, the amount of six-round hype for Larry Roundtree, man, people are going insane. I understand we get the James Robinsons occasionally, undrafted guy, but you know what I mean. But for every James Robinson, you know, there's dozens of Eno Benjamins, Justice Hills, Darwin Thompsons that don't work out. So we need to monitor that, because maybe Roundtree does beat out Kelly and Jackson. He gets that early down roll. The more likely scenario is maybe Austin freaking Eckler, the guy they're paying to be the RB1, takes on a much larger role than we're even potentially accounting for. With our PFF projections, I took the carries and I just, you know, got an expected, like, projected fantasy opportunity score out of it. Usual carry gets you 0.6 PPR points. Usual target gets you 1.61 last 10 years. Doing that for our 2021 projections, the top six running backs in projected opportunity, CMC, Dalvin Cook, Kamara, Zeke, Saquon, and Austin Eckler. The opportunities there, I feel like he still gets, you know, not hate per se, but people underrate him because of his come up as an undrafted guy, originally being the backup to Melvin Gordon. Austin Eckler is just a fantastic football player. And, you know, for Zeke to almost like people to feel better about him after seeing the one pick of him shirtless, and, you know, having the six pack, like every time Austin Eckler takes his shirt off, man, I feel like, you know, just a situation where you're seeing one of the more jacked guys that you've seen in a while. So Eckler might not be, you know, your typical three down, you know, Derrick Henry grinder, obviously not, but that's fine. We want someone that catches passes, and Kamara and McCaffrey are pretty much the only guys that might do it better than Eckler in the entire league. So that was actually my wild card scenario, was Eckler being the overall RB1. I think it's in his range of outcomes if they can give him, you know, 200 plus carries. Either way, perfectly fine pick and the first early second, man. I would take it as a personal insult if you don't take Austin Eckler. Want to talk some Mike Williams, though. He's your favorite fantasy value pick. It's just a shame that we have a guy that had an 11 touchdown season, not 10. He had a rushing score in there as well. 11 touchdown season, 1,000 yard season, still doesn't have a year with more than even 90 targets. 58 players had more targets than Mike Williams last year, despite him being seventh in yards per target. Man, if he can just break his fall a little bit more often on some of these contested catches he has, otherwise just get the target share he deserves, we can see Mike Williams easily flirt with wide receiver two value in fantasy, Andrew. And he's going outside the top 40. Are we missing anything? We just got to draft Mike Williams.
Yes, draft Mike Williams. Again, you covered how he can get over 1,000 receiving yards. I'll hit on how he's going to get the double-digit touchdowns. Okay, so he has 24 end zone targets since the start of 2019, which ranks eighth most in the NFL. And for some reason that blows my freaking mind, Big Mike Williams, the contested catch savant, has caught just three of them for touchdowns. He's 24 end zone targets and just three for touchdowns. Every other player who has seen that amount of end zone target volume has averaged at least 12 touchdowns. So it would be one thing if I didn't believe Mike Williams could or was an effective big catch receiver. Like if he was a smaller player or something like that, okay, like that makes sense. Like he's just not a good red zone guy. But Mike Williams, like that's part of his game. Like, again, it's just been bad luck that he hasn't been able to score a lot of these touchdowns and then things have been out of bounds, like things like that. So I really believe that Mike Williams has touchdown regression kind of working in his favor. And I think that's why we're going to see a big year out of him.
Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, we know they're starting. Number three wide receiver spot is a little bit up for grabs. We got Jalen Guyton, Tyron Johnson was starting to come on towards the end of last year. And maybe, just maybe, third round pick in Tennessee, Josh Palmer could be that guy. I'm starting to drink some more Palmer Kool-Aid. I'm in this just dynasty draft that's ongoing right now. And I took Palmer today in like round 17. Felt great about it. He has the potential to be the number three receiver sooner rather than later this year in this field stretching role. That was basically the best thing he always did at Tennessee regardless. And if the Mike Williams thing doesn't go great, he could be gone next year. Now we're already talking about Palmer as Justin Herbert's number two pass game option as early as 2022. Are you buying Palmer with me, Andrew?
Yes, I'm definitely buying Palmer again. He was someone that stood out a lot, not because of his production, because it was really bad at Tennessee, because he did not have a good quarterback play. But like you mentioned, the average depth of target was there. It was very downfield focused, and he saw a lot of targets in the end zone. So he almost has a similar profile to a Mike Williams. So again, if Mike Williams breaks out, it probably isn't going to be at the same time as a Josh Palmer. But if Mike Williams ends up walking next year, you're going to be feeling really good about having Josh Palmer in your dynasty team.
Josh Palmer, Diami Brown, when you see third round capital and there's a theoretical open spot in a good offense with three wide receivers, hey, people, worst ways to spend.
It's not Jalen Guyton. It's not Jalen Guyton. He was 13th in routes run last year. 13th overall.
It's the Quentin Patton role, man. It infuriates me. You're preaching the choir. Put Austin Eckler out there, you know?
Yes.
That means more
carries for LR3, baby. Let's go.
Oh, my God. LR3. At least he's got a good nickname. Over under 9.5. Oh, no. I got to get your wild card. What's your wild card, Andrew?
Oh, my wild card was LR3. So just some buzz from the Chargers. And again, if they don't end up using Austin Eckler at the goal line, it's going to probably be either LR3 or Joshua Kelly. The one thing that Roundtree did at college was score touchdowns. He scored over 40 touchdowns in college. He's not athletic whatsoever, but he does fit the type of bigger back in between the tackles grinder that would kind of complement an Austin Eckler who's a little bit smaller back. Again, I don't think teams should really just have designated goal line backs at all. I kind of wanted to do more research on like, what is a goal line back? Like, what does it actually look like to be a goal line back and to be an effective one? Because I think that we have this stereotype in our mind that's like, just this big, like slow guy to be a goal line back. And to me, it's just like, does that really make a lot of sense? So maybe I'll do some more research on that. But yeah, I think that one of these backs, Joshua Kelly, Larry Roundtree, could potentially be interesting if Eckler isn't seeing, you know, 20, 25 touches a game.
I would imagine what matters more, like it could honestly be the smaller backs, because if you're like, the problem I think teams run into is when they do these traditional goal line triple tight end formations at the 1 yard line and you have 22 players condensed in this box, keep spreading them out near the goal line, you know, do what the, you know, I know you can combat it and that's why you don't want to pull what the Seahawks did to give you that, you know, Super Bowl back in the day. I just think that, you know, the more you kind of just use your traditional offense inside the five versus, you know, trying to change things all of a sudden, I think there could be some truth to that. And that also, when you eventually look at that, see like what teams actually have designated vultures inside the 5-yard line, because I think Mike Tolbert once upon a time pissed off so many people that were still, you know, assuming that teams have these designated goal line backs, when I think more times than not, Austin Eckler's an exception. And oh my gosh, what's the other one? Chase Edmonds is the potential exception of like, okay, we literally have guys that were getting one or two total carries like inside the 5-yard line. That's when I'll perk up and listen. But I just see a lot of times where more times than not, it's just the starting running back was tired. He gets taken off the field. They enter the goal line and now their running back that's in the game stays in the game. Finally, Andrew, we have reached our fourth over under 9.5 wins, -135 lean on the under. We're both taking the over, right? Are we 4-for-4?
Yes, going with the over. Anthony Lynn is out the door. And with that, his bad coaching is also out the door. They lost 7 one-score games last season. So they were in it to win way more games. They were way better than their record showed. And again, you talked about it with Mike Williams. This team's stacked on paper. If they freaking can stay healthy, they're going to win way more games than they were last year. So for me, I'm going to take the over. And when I saw Derwin James trending on Twitter earlier today, my heart almost stopped because I'm like, oh my God, like, why is he trending on Twitter? Like, this can't be good. But it was for a good thing. He did a great cause for one of the Chargers fan. So I'm glad to see Derwin is healthy and thriving. And I'm hoping the Chargers hit this over.
Brandon Staley, the way he built his defense with the Rams was so just great because he built all around his 2-star players, Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. He didn't just put Ramsey on the number one receiver. And I'm not saying he did sometimes, you know, when the matchup called for it, but we'd see him in the slot. We'd see him used as, you know, your best player should be used all over the place. We have Joey Bosa and Derwin James. Like, okay, give me Ramsey and Donald. I'm not trying to say that, you know, it's a swap or anything, but if you look around the league, man, and name your number two situation for trying to run that defense again, it very well might be Joey Bosa and Derwin James. So if we're getting that good of a defense with an offense that already looking pretty damn good, and as we talked about, plenty of opportunities to take a step forward, I am with you on the over. Usually we don't agree this much with our over under picks, so must be on to something, or maybe that you know, lightning is just more signs of you know,
despair. We're in the twilight zone right now. That's what not happened.
To say, we're going to learn a lot from the eventual, you know, whatever the results of the predictions made on this edition of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Finally, Andrew, we have the AFC West division winner to break down. Chiefs are at -250, courtesy of DraftKings Sportsbook. Chargers +400, Broncos +550, Raiders +2500. Which bet do you like the most?
I think I'll just take some plus money with the Chargers. Again, I think that's probably the approach I would do it again. The Chiefs, I could probably find a safer, I mean, I could just invest in Apple or something like that if I wanted to. Maybe I can make more money. Because the Chiefs are probably going to win the division. Like, that's obviously why they're the favorite, but I think you can find better odds of a guarantee somewhere else in the stock market. I don't know, GameStop, man, do whatever you want. But I did think an interesting bet here, instead of going the Chargers winning the division, was just going out for Justin Herbert MVP. I think that if the Chargers win the division over the Chiefs, chances are Justin Herbert, sorry, PFS Seth, I'm sorry, but he probably didn't regress if they're going to end up winning the division. So
Mahomes got hurt, and then there's your number one contender out either way.
Exactly. So again, we talked about how this team is complete. Again, the MVP is all about building a story and a narrative, like they conquered the great Chiefs. So again, Justin Herbert, his MVP odds are +1800. So again, that's not like top, that's not the most expensive one, and second year quarterback. So I don't hate that instead of just going after the division.
I'm with you. Chargers +400. I just think -250 is a little steep for, again, a team that fully expect to win the AFC, but they need Patrick Mahomes to keep being Patrick Mahomes in the late 250. And division with several other talented teams, particularly offenses, a little too steep for my taste as well. Before we get out of here, everyone, I want to give a quick shout out to our friends over at Underdog Fantasy. If you like fantasy football and if you like playing fantasy for money, you need to check out Underdog Fantasy. Underdog's got everything, including season-long and playoff best ball. Best ball is a season-long game where you draft a team like you normally do. But that's it. There's no in-season roster management. Underdog automatically selects your best performers each week, saving you loads of time. Go to Underdog Fantasy and deposit $10. Use promo code PFF and get a free PFF Edge annual subscription. That's promo code PFF. Draft now at Underdog Fantasy. Andrew and I will be drafting Thursday night. So last night when you're listening to this podcast on a Friday, but you can check out that recording over at pff.com, PFF Twitter, and Andrew and Jared. Usually I'm there every couple of weeks, Thursday nights, drafting over at Underdog Fantasy. Code PFF. Gotta love it. Andrew, great stuff today. You're continuing to crank out team previews throughout the week. You're coming on the podcast, making freaking content throughout the summer, man. Anything else you want to get off your chest before we get out of here?
All right. Well, I'll just, so I've been talking about, we obviously went to Patriots training camp. I know this is an AFC podcast, but I will lay down one of the nuggets that's kind of stuck out to me the last couple of days I've been there. I'm going to release a whole team preview. I'm going to do the AFC East the following week. So you guys will be able to read up on that at pff.com. But this is for the real listeners that have listened all the way through, getting in this nitty gritty knowledge. Like, you cannot find this information anywhere because it's mine, because I was there.
Wow.
And about the tight end position, Hunter Henry looks like the red zone guy for the Patriots. So again, if that's a deciding factor between you and Jonnu Smith, I know they paid Jonnu Smith a lot of money, but at the same time, like, Hunter Henry's constantly, doesn't matter if it's Cam, doesn't matter if it's Mac Jones, like, he's constantly getting peppered with targets in the red zone. So take that as you will. I'm going to rank Hunter Henry probably above Jonnu Smith unless I see something else. I'm going to go to a couple more practices unless I see something else that changes my mind. But really, I see Jonnu Smith, yes, he's getting more of the jet sweeps type of usage around the goal line, whereas Hunter Henry's actually getting the legit targets. And I think for me, at least early on, I feel like that has Hunter Henry kind of looking more like the Gronk role in this offense, with Jonnu Smith using as the Hernandez role again. And we know who was better for fantasy in that component, and it was Hunter Henry. So a little nugget for everybody there.
From the podcast that brought you Michael Thomas's ankle injury weeks before the mainstream media, now you're getting on the, you know, on the grass report straight out of training camp from Andrew Erickson. You heard it here first, everyone. Hunter Henry, number one red zone target. And if he's not, you know, okay, it was a training camp practice. Chill the hell out. We're just, you know, we're trying to do what we can here. So good stuff, Andrew. Thank you as always, my man. This has been the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. He's Andrew. I'm Ian. We'll continue to crank out these team previews. Keep tuning in. Love you all. Until next time, take care.